New York Times bestselling author A.J. Baim's new book, Dewey Defeats Truman, gives us the story of what happened to Truman's presidency after the bomb was dropped. It chronicles the story of the 1948 presidential election, one of the greatest election stories of all time, as Truman mounted a history-making comeback and staked a claim for a new course for America. On the eve of the 1948 election, America was a fractured country. Racism was rampant, foreign relations were fraught, and political parties were more divided than ever. Americans were certain that President Harry S. Truman's political career was over. The only man in the world confident that Truman would win was Mr. Truman himself, and win he did. A.J. Baim is the author of The Accidental President, Harry S. Truman and the 4 Months That Changed the World, and is a longtime regular contributor to The Wall Street Journal. It's a great pleasure to welcome him to the roundtable this morning. A.J. Baim, thank you very much for being with us.
What a pleasure. Thank you.
Very nice to have you on the program. What brought you to this 1948 election?
Well, you know what? I wrote a book called The Accidental President. I guess it came out in 2017, and it was about the first 4 months of the Truman administration. So I spent a lot of time in the Truman Library. And even before that book was done, I knew I wanted to write about the 1948 election because I was just so drawn to the story. I knew that if I worked quickly, that the book could come out during this election cycle, which I thought was important. And there was a way to write this book about the 1948 election in the way that it hadn't been written before. And by that, I mean, I wanted to, there were four candidates, and all the books, they tend to just focus on Truman, whereas I thought it would be really fascinating to follow all four candidates through the election cycle.
Let us talk for a moment about the last book and just where Truman was politically and as far as popularity goes at the end of the war. And then how he gets to 1948 in such political trouble.
Well, that's a great question. So The Accidental President, this book that came out in 2017, talks about the first four months of the Truman administration. So Truman, FDR dies. It's April 12th, 1945. I actually spend the first 38 pages of that book on one day, April 12th, 1945.
Right.
And Truman, who never expected to be the vice president, who never should have been really a senator to begin with, who sort of fell into politics, suddenly finds himself the president of the United States. And he doesn't think he's up to the job. The whole country is shocked, not just because FDR is dead, but because this unknown person who has never owned his own home, never had the money to own his own home, never governor of a state, never mayor of a city, no college degree, was suddenly the most powerful man in the history of the world and didn't even have any knowledge of the atomic bomb when he became president. So, and during the first 4 months, he really unites the nation. It's this incredible feel-good story. And this new book, Dewey Defeats Truman, takes off right where that ends, and you see the exact opposite happen. So the coming out of the war, the Truman administration sort of collapses, and the Democratic Party shatters.
What,
and so coming up into 1948, it appears that there's no way he can win.
What is Truman's role in that? In the sense, how much of it was outside forces of a change in culture and people had been, if you want, you know, suppressed by war for so long and things were blooming and things were changing? And how much was Truman, this due to Truman himself?
I think that's another great question. To my mind, given all the research I've done, it really wasn't his fault. I think the country was coming out of the war. We were looking at 16 years of New Deal politics, and I think people were sick of it. And coming out of the war, we had to transfer from this wartime economy in which the whole country was really dedicated to winning this war, and the transference back to a peacetime economy was a very difficult thing for any president to manage. And there was no way to please everybody, labor unions, farming communities, everyday Americans who saw their prices rising of all of the things that they needed to buy every day. And there was no way to manage it. And his own party was falling apart in the process because you had these forces that were thrust upon him, the conservatism of the South, the progressivism of the West. And, you know, people really just thought Truman was ineffective. And so the 1946 midterms were really, really devastating to his administration. So, of course, as we went into the 1948 election cycle, again, the pollsters, the newspaper writers, the politicians, and, of course, we're just in the new television age, people watching this stuff on the television machine, everybody was saying that Truman was toast.
Even his wife, Bess Truman, thought he was toast, but Truman was confident.
He was. He was the only one who believed he could win. And, you know, I spent a lot of time in this new book. I was able to, there's so much information at the Truman Library. Everybody on the campaign train wrote a diary, including Truman's daughter, including at times Truman himself. So there was, it was really, I was able to really get inside these people's heads and hopefully put the reader on the campaign trail. And one of the things I liked about this book is that no matter where you live in the country, certainly in New England, there's a part of this book that enters your hometown. Like, for example, I live in a small town in California, and the Truman train came here. And I can listen to that speech on the Truman Library website, as can others who live all over the country.
It is fascinating because it was really that ultimately worked for him, if you look back, right? I mean, it's the coming to the towns, talking to the people, and he was doing something that he saw town to town that the pollsters and even his own wife did not see.
That's right. Bess didn't think he could win. His own daughter didn't think he could win. And he goes from town to town. And it's fascinating, a lot of the speeches, he would give 8-9 speeches a day. He would come out at 6 o'clock in the morning in his pajamas and speak off the cuff to everyday Americans. He would be armed with little pieces of information, like, for example, if he came into, you know, Framingham, Massachusetts, he would know there's a new sausage factory there. And he would address these people off the cuff right on the back of his campaign train. And in the end, there was this surge of will and excitement. And so by the time you get to election day, the president had really become an American folk hero.
So let us talk about the other candidates. As you said, many of these books do not focus on those other candidates. Obviously, these are the men he is running against, but they are very important. Lay out the race for us, if you will.
Sure. So one of the many reasons why nobody thought Truman could win is because two politicians, quite powerful, bolted the Democratic Party, split with Truman, and ran their own campaigns. So imagine this. This is very relevant today because one of the things that Truman really ran hard on, he was the first presidential candidate to really, really push the civil rights issue and court African-American voters. Nobody had ever done that. Roosevelt did, but not nearly to the degree that Truman did. So you had one Democratic governor, South Carolina, Strom Thurmond, who bolts the party and runs this campaign on one issue, white supremacy. And he wins 4 states. Can you imagine that today? I wonder what would happen if one of our politicians ran on white supremacy. Would he win what states? We don't know. Henry Wallace, his campaign was secretly being run by a clique of communists, and his politics were so controversial that sometimes his rallies would see violence and stabbings, and he would go out on the lectern, and he campaigned through the South, and he said, "I will not speak at anywhere where whites and blacks can't sit next to each other. I will not stay in any hotel where black people are not allowed." And so by the time he gets down there, he has these rallies where people are just literally hurling eggs and tomatoes and ice cream cones at him. And he did not fare so well in the end. But still, we can learn a lot from these sort of political misfits today, as much sometimes as the winners. And then, of course, you have Thomas Dewey, who everybody expected to be the first Republican president in 16 years. And even on election night, he's on his campaign train, headed back to the governor's mansion in Albany. And he gives an off-the-record talk to all of these reporters explaining who's going to be in his cabinet because he was sure that the next day he was going to be elected. It's fascinating.
What were his pluses in the sense of what Dewey was able to bring to the campaign, and what was the contrast between Dewey and Truman on the campaign trail in those months and weeks leading up to Election Day?
Well, one of the reasons Dewey lost is because he made a strategic decision early in the campaign that he was going to run this eloquent, campaign, and he came up with this concept of unity. And so he was everywhere he went, he spoke about unity, how America was going to be united again in a way it hadn't been in the past. And he really didn't tell Americans much about what his policies were. And at the same time, he was very much a centrist. He was a liberal Republican. And so in the end, it was really the farming community that drove a stake into his election. He didn't win because the farmers abandoned him, and he didn't see that coming. I often hear from readers who say he would have made a great president. And I think that's true. I think he would have. He probably would have served two terms, and America would have done well under him.
Does I'm skipping ahead here, but does the narrow win for Truman impact his decision not to run 4 years later?
I don't think so. I think that he thought that a president should serve two terms and be done. So, and you know, it's an interesting question and not one I've spent a lot of time thinking about. 1952. I think he was old and tired. You know, I don't think that he really, really always enjoyed being president. I thought he was a public servant, and I think he thought it was his duty to do so. But a lot of times he called the White House the Great White Jail because it was rough being president. It was so he couldn't please everybody.
You certainly see parallels, and the impeachment headlines and Russian interference and the fights with Congress and so forth. But yet you still, at least for me, you read the book and you think, oh, compared to today, oh, how quaint. And I don't know if that's fair or it's the time and this seems more immediate. But I mean, the direct question to you is there are certainly parallels, though.
Oh, of course. And some I expected and some I didn't. So I knew there would be parallels, but I didn't expect there to be today a surge in white nationalism the way we saw in 1948, violence against African Americans the way we saw in 1948. I didn't expect to find that in 1948, both the Democrats and Republicans were very concerned that Moscow was going to try to interfere in our election. I have it right in front of me. I'm going to read one sentence from the most surprising document that I found during my entire research in the Dewey Papers. There's this memorandum that says, quote, "The United States of America is fair game for Moscow and has been for years. And as far as anyone is willing to see, the year 1948 will be the year in which Soviet Russia will do everything in its power to influence the election here." That was surprising to me. Now, this was true of both the Democrats and the Republicans. The Democrats were fearful that Moscow was going to interfere and try to get the Republicans elected, and the Republicans thought the same, that Moscow was going to interfere and try to get the Democrats elected. Of course, none of that ended up happening for many years until possibly 2016, depending on who you believe.
Right. But did they take it seriously in the sense of what were there then investigations as to if there was interference?
Yes. Only in so much is that Henry Wallace was such a controversial figure because he was the only person out there grandstanding saying that this new Cold War thing that everybody was talking about was not Russia's fault, but it was the U.S., that it was the Truman administration that was leading the country toward World War III. So the FBI began looking into the Wallace campaign big time, and we have all that documentation.
So that brings us to the question that becomes obvious at some point if you're talking about a president, which is about legacy. So when does Truman really start to put his legacy, form the legacy that we know, and we're still learning, of course, as your book demonstrates, we're still learning about Truman. But the here is a man who narrowly won in 1948, and on the top 10 list of presidents today is on that list, usually.
Well, that's fascinating, and that's a whole other book, why that happened, because when he left office, he was not popular at all. So why is it today that you have him usually ranked sixth or seventh all time? And why is it today that you have Donald Trump quoting Truman. And at the same time, you have Nancy Pelosi quoting Truman. Why is that? I think if this book answers one question, it's that. Because during the 1948 election, what he accomplished through just pure effort and patriotism, what he accomplished was just fascinating. And I think that story embodies his legacy more than anything. Now, politically, one of the reasons he was so counted out in 1948 is because he really threw himself into the New Deal. Like, he really aligned himself with FDR's legacy, what FDR had done, and liberal politics. And by the time he came back from Europe, from the Potsdam Conference, he gives this speech in which he outlines his policy. This is my policy. And it was extraordinarily liberal to the left. And a lot of Americans were sick of that. And so, but that really, politically, that is his legacy.
The name of the new book, Dewey Defeats Truman, the 1948 Election and the Battle for America's Soul. The book is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. A.J. Bam, I thank you very much for spending time with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
It's such a pleasure. Thank you.
Be well. Thank you. Again, the name of the book, Dewey Defeats Truman. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.